It's very much at the forefront of agricultural news of late in the wake of the election, and that is where trade agreements are headed pertaining to agricultural exports and imports. Specifically, as we'll launch into this, the fate of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We've invited by, once again, K-State agricultural economist Vincent Amanor-Boadu to offer his insight on what's going to transpire from here with respect to these international trade agreements and how this will reflect on agriculture. Lots of rancor over the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. There has been the proposal that the U.S. withdraw from those negotiations and ratifying that agreement. The pros and cons of that, as you look at it, Vincent.
Well, the way the agreement was structured was that the president got the presidential advantage from Congress, saying you negotiate it and then you bring it back and there was an up or down vote on it. Now, as you know, there was a lot of against positions on the TPP, and so to the point where it was described as dead on arrival.
Prior to the election, mind.
Prior to the election. So it never made it even to Congress. During the election, both parties, presidential candidates, said they were not happy with the TPP, and one said they will renegotiate it, and the other said they will cancel it, in other words, withdraw from it. Now, both positions basically does exactly what a downvote by the current president will do, because if you're going to renegotiate the agreement, it's just going to basically drag out a lot longer, probably longer than the 4 years that you'll be in power, and if you're going to withdraw from it, then basically we've left it.
And in fact, other countries who have already signed on to the agreement have indicated they will move forward,
right,
irrespective of what's decided here in this country.
Exactly. But the truth of the matter is, when the U.S. withdraws from the TPP is not going to be as strong as, you know, a group that had the United States involved. With the U.S. involved, they will control about 40% of global trade. The U.S. out, it leaves basically relatively smaller countries, Canada, Chile, Peru, Japan, in the Australia in this arrangement. And so they no longer have the strength that the U.S. would have brought to the game.
Well, right to it. This is the pressing question. What does non-participation in the Trans-Pacific Partnership mean as far as impact on agricultural trade from the United States and to the United States for that matter?
Well, you know, the U.S. has bilateral or multilateral trade agreements with each of the TPP members, mm-hmm, with the exception of New Zealand and Brunei. But all the other ones, U.S. has bilateral trade agreements with them, either a trade framework or an investment partnership or something. So technically, there isn't going to be any effect at all, because the truth is that the TPP was not really about trade. The TPP was meant to contain China's growth and expansion in the area. I mean, we saw in the past few years China's militaristic initiatives in the region. And as it gets larger and, you know, in terms of its economic growth, chances are that it's going to exert more pressure in the region. So the idea of the TPP was basically to create an initiative in the Pacific Rim that allowed the U.S. to define international trade rules instead of allowing China to define them. And so the whole agreement was structured to keep China out.
And that really wasn't talked up as much in the ongoing debate over TPP.
No, unfortunately, the strategic intent of the TPP was never talked about. And so what it made it look like was the TPP was a brand new trade agreement that was going to move jobs away from the U.S. or create access to the U.S. market that currently didn't exist for these trading partners. But all of them have access to the U.S. market already under either bilateral agreement or some multilateral agreement or some other form of trade relationship that is already in place. So the TPP was not doing anything that was new. What it was doing that we can say was really useful for us was incorporating environmental protection into a regional agreement and also including labor standards and worker rights into the regional agreement. This is something that has led to the stall of the WTO agreements, and which has led to the development of these bilateral regional agreements over the whole place, because we can't move forward at the WTO. So getting those two major agreements into this particular TPP was a very useful thing for us. Economically, you can think about it as by beginning to get worker rights in place, that is what's going to raise labor wages in these countries, making it a lot more difficult for countries to ship work out of the United States. By increasing environmental protection standards, we were basically bringing it at par, so companies wouldn't have a competitive advantage, you know, by having lower standards in their regulatory environment and therefore increasing their competitive advantage against U.S. companies. So that basically is where we stand on this.
So with TPP, sans the United States either moving forward or going in some other direction, that means that those advantages on the part of those other countries will remain intact.
Yes, but, you know, everyone involved in this believes that it's going to be extremely difficult for the rest of the 11 other members to maintain the TPP going forward.
Right.
It's going to dismantle. Now, around middle of 2015, when this whole sort of disagreement or
doubt,
lack of support for TPP began to take a stronger position, China moved in and started building its own coalitions about a regional trade partnership. And that is what I think is going to take position without us in the game.
And now you're referring to that other agreement that's been lurking in the shadows, if you will.
We are referring to the regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership with China in the lead. And strangely enough, in the last week, Japan has signed on and Australia has signed on. And both these countries are strong TPP members. In addition to these two, you have India and you have South Korea. While the current membership of the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership is not as big as the TPP, they still control about 27% of global GDP. So they are not including currently, at least at the moment, you know, the smaller countries, Brunei and Malaysia, and, you know, economically speaking. But they've picked up India. So right now, the RCEP has the world's two largest countries. Those two alone accounting for more than a third of global population involved. And that changes the game significantly.
So China in charge as that moves forward, how much does U.S. agriculture suffer from its being on the sidelines, so to speak?
Well, this is where the whole talk about the TPP is not really useful in a sense for us in agriculture, because we do have all these bilateral agreements in place already. So we're still going to ship. We're still going to ship product to Japan under our agreements. We're still going to ship to Peru and to Chile and to Canada and to Mexico under the agreements we currently have in place. We're still going to trade with Australia under the bilateral agreement that we have with them. The challenge for us is that as China gets into building better relationships with India, with Japan, with South Korea, what does that mean for us? Because China is going to making significant investments in other places around the world in agriculture. China is buying land in Africa, producing food, ostensibly for domestic consumption. But nothing is stopping China from elevating production in Africa and looking to the world to trade. And so these present significant challenges in the long term that we have to think about from our perspective, because while, you know, and I say this with all confidence, while U.S. agriculture remains the most productive globally, and it's significantly way ahead of the rest of the world in terms of its productivity, chances are that as traders, we are going to be subject to demand and supply conditions. And it doesn't take much for us to see the conditions we are seeing currently in agriculture world, with prices in an upside down position from what they were just about a few years ago. And so given this uncertainty and risky environment we have in agriculture, having some form of certainty on trade deals present us a lot of peace of mind in knowing that the product has been sold and we don't have to worry about any difficulties in moving product, even if we don't like the prices.
But now there is uncertainty.
Now there is uncertainty in some of these markets.
Vincent, if you'd hold on for a few moments, we need to break away, and then we want to return and to pick up more on this topic of trade broadly and another trade agreement in specific that may be in the balance. Vincent Amanor-Boadu is our guest, agricultural economist with K-State.